So let your colors run tonight. We're painting in the dark. Let your colors run tonight. The colors of your heart.
Welcome back to the Catchy Lefty podcast. We are Creative Lectionary Planning, and this week we are going to be talking about the second Sunday in Christmas. We're going to be in the Old Testament text, which means we're going to be looking at Jeremiah 31, verses 7 through 14. My name is J.R. Forresteros, and I am joined this week by Patrick Engel. Welcome, Patrick.
Hey, good to be here.
Chris Patton. Welcome, Chris.
How's it going?
Great. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I am doing excellent.
So we decided we would start by reading the text and then sort of talking about what we're doing. If you listen to Christmas 1, you know that Chris and I are both working out of the Advent series that we had been doing called What to Expect When We're Expecting, and Patrick started the series that we're going to all be doing for Epiphany called Fear and Desire. So as we are talking about what we are planning to do with this text, you'll be sort of hearing us pull different themes out based on the series that we're in. So let's go ahead and hear Jeremiah 31, verses 7 through 14.
And this is from the New Oxford Annotated Bible.
That's my favorite.
And it reads, "For thus says the Lord, sing aloud with gladness for Jacob, and raise shouts for the chief of the nations. Proclaim, give praise, and say, save, O Lord, your people, the remnant of Israel. See, I am going to bring them from the land of the north and gather them from the farthest parts of the earth, among them the blind and the lame, those with child and those in labor together. A great company they shall return here. With weeping they shall come, and with consolations I will lead them back. I will let them walk by brooks of water in a straight path in which they shall not stumble. For I have become a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Hear the word of the Lord, O nations, and declare it in the coastlands far away. Say, he who scattered Israel will gather him, and will keep him as a shepherd keeps a flock. For the Lord has ransomed Jacob, and has redeemed him from the lands too strong for him. They shall come and sing aloud on the height of Zion, and they shall be radiant over the goodness of the Lord, over the grain, the wine, and the oil, and over the young of the flock and the herd. Their life shall become like a watered garden, and they shall never languish again. Then shall the young women rejoice in the dance, and the young men and the old shall be merry. I will turn their mourning into joy. I will comfort them and give them gladness for sorrow. I will give the priests their fill of fatness, and my people shall be satisfied with my bounty, says the Lord."
So this is Jeremiah 31. It's in a section of Jeremiah scholars call the Book of Comfort, which is a collection of Jeremiah's prophecies that are specifically addressing those who have experienced the exile. So we're in a position of looking out of devastation towards a more hopeful future. And we've been really, throughout the entire Advent journey, have been really talking a lot about exile and about the experience of exile and about the journey from exile into hope as the Advent journey. So I'm planning on using this Sunday very much as like a pivoting point between the What to Expect When We're Expecting series and moving into the Fear and Desire series, where we're going to be talking a lot more about calling and our participation in calling. And so I'm going to use a lot of what's going on in this text to identify that sort of already not yet gap, and talking about how there are like God's promises that were begun to be fulfilled on Christmas are not yet fulfilled, and that we're still like longing and anticipating. You can just read like all of the promises that God has made here and say, yeah, this is not what God's people are experiencing yet. And so talking about like using this text to sort of make our people aware of that gap so that they can, again, begin to imagine how they're being called into that gap.
Cool. I haven't really actually come to a full grasp of everything that I want to use this text for, because it does, I mean, it's also really similar to the first text in Advent, Jeremiah 33. And I think like that's kind of what I have been doing for the season of Advent, has been leading the people to that gap in between what what God has promised to be doing and what has not necessarily occurred and how they can participate within that. And so, like, I feel like I keep wanting to go back to that, and maybe I need to do that just to kind of use it as another summary to put us into Epiphany and like what that looks like. But I'd be curious, I mean, for any help along that way. As I was just reading it, I was thinking of you, Jer, you don't have any kids. Chris, have you ever seen that TV show, that cartoon show about the pig, the female pig, Olivia?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes. Okay, so there's this one episode of Olivia where it's a school play and she wanted to be like the queen fairy. And the line goes like this. It's like, tonight we will eat and drink and we will all be merry. And then the queen fairy goes and it like asks all of the forest creatures if they will be merry. And Olivia wanted to be the queen fairy, but instead she got placed as the cow. And so she was like, so the whole episode is her like trying to sabotage the play because the position that she was given is not the position that she felt like she deserved or the position that she wanted. And so I think that's actually probably more of where I'm going to craft my sermon on this particular Sunday, is to talk about how we have been given the promise of what God will do for us, and we will find ourselves in the midst of that. But like, this is a very hopeful text about God restoring all of creation and gathering everybody from all tribes. And I think that works really well with the New Testament text that we're going to look at in Epiphany, because again, it's one of those things. It's like what we expect God to do is not necessarily what God is going to do. In fact, God is going to do more than that. And are we going to be participants in that, or are we going to be people who try to sabotage what God is trying to do? And so I'm going to use that more as kind of a reflection for my people about, are we participating in what God has promised that God will do, or are we trying to sabotage what God has promised that God will do in our actions and in the way that we function with one another and in society?
That's sort of what we're hoping to do as well, is paint that picture and say, are you participating with God, or are you, I like the sabotaging language. I think that's fantastic.
Sweet.
So the first Sunday of every year, which is usually this Sunday, second Sunday after Christmas or so, we always have, this is when we have our covenant renewal service, and we sort of adapt and take Wesley's covenant renewal and work through it at the beginning of the year. And this text kind of works really well with that, in the sense of, Patrick, what you were saying, this working with, but also this reminder. I think sometimes we get so focused on what God has promised, and we lose sight of the fact that God has promised, this sense of God's faithfulness to God's people, whatever that's going to look like. And so that gives us an opportunity to remind people, you know, again, with the whole what to expect and we're expecting, sometimes we don't know what to expect from God, but we read texts like this that remind us that God has promised to be faithful. And we may not be sure what that looks like. We get some images like this Jeremiah text, but I think I end up focusing on, or Georgia or whomever's going to preach for us, that God will be faithful, that this will happen, that God is making all things new. I was reading, or Patrick was reading verse 8, and I was thinking of, there's a short story by Flannery O'Connor called Revelation, and it's about a lady who is very judgmental in her whole life. She's sort of this pious, I'm better than everyone else, and The last paragraph of the short story, her life kind of falls apart, and she has this vision, And I was thinking about it as I was reading verse 8, this idea that the blind and the lame and those with child and those with labor, those are the ones that are specifically mentioned. So I wanted to read the O'Connor thing, if that's okay with you guys.
Yeah.
So it says, so her life's kind of falling apart, and she has this vision. It says, as she, at last she lifted up her head, there was only a purple streak in the sky, cutting through a field of crimson and leading like an extension of the highway into the descending dust. She raised her hands from the side of the pen in a gesture profound. A visionary light settled in her eyes. She saw the streak as a swinging bridge extending upward from the earth through a field of living fire. Upon it, a vast horde of souls were tumbling toward heaven. There were whole companies of white trash, cleaned for the first time in their lives, and bands of migrant workers in white robes, and battalions of freaks and lunatics, shouting and clapping and leaping like frogs. And bringing up the end of the procession was a tribe of people whom she recognized at once as those who, like herself and Claude, had always had a little of everything and the God-given wit to use it right. She leaned forward to observe them closer. They were marching behind the others with great dignity and accountable, as they had always been, for good order and common sense and respectable behavior. And they alone were singing on key. Yet she could see by their shocked and altered faces that even their virtues were being burned away. And I thought of that when we read the verse, and then as Patrick was talking about this working for or against the images that are painted here in Jeremiah. And sometimes the things we think we're working for, we're actually working against by our piety and our Flannery O'Connor calls it our respectable behavior and good order. So I'm going to be tying in that kind of imagery as I work through this text. So that should be fun.
Do you think you're going to have that read during your service?
Yeah, this is actually something that I end up reading. I read it about every other year because it is such an amazing text, especially for we folk who tend to have it all together, middle class, white America, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And but it is such a beautiful image, and I think it very much is consistent with the image of Jeremiah 31.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's been that whole – I think that's been consistent with – I mean, just with this whole season as a whole of what we've been reading and doing and preaching every Sunday. Will you put that up on the website?
Yes, I can do that.
Cool.
I want to say one other thing about the text that we're as I'm working with it. You know, so our church has like a new vision statement, and we're trying to figure out like where we're going in the next 10 years. And I'm the hook for getting into this with my congregation this week is, you know, it's New Year. It's the first Sunday of the New Year, New Year's resolutions, all that kind of stuff. Basically saying it's only January 3rd right now, so most of us probably haven't broken our resolutions yet. But that's the problem with like vision statements and resolutions and things like that, is that most of them never actually happen. Like, we know 100 companies that had a fancy vision statement that went under. We know plenty of churches that said that they wanted things to get better, but they died anyway, you know, those kinds of things. And so I'm actually borrowing from Walter Brueggemann's commentary on Jeremiah. He talks about this particular passage as a promise. And so he says it's not a prediction, as though God is just hoping things are going to happen and work out this way for his people. And it's also not a description, as though God is just looking into a crystal ball and describing what is going to happen in the future if things, you know, continue to go the way they're going. Like, this is a declaration of God's divine activity. And it's a statement of God's intention to interact in human history and to move, and so then again, I'm going to be inviting our people to say, you know, God has declared what God is going to do. Now we have the opportunity to respond and join in. If that makes sense.
Oh yeah, no, totally. I like that.
How are you going to work through the kind of block that Patrick pointed out, that God has promised to do this, but in a lot of ways it hasn't happened, How do you kind of work through that block?
Yeah, that's that like already not yet tension where we confess Christmas as the beginning of that, but that we're still in the midst of that. And so again, it's actually that's good news for us that this has not finished happening yet, because that means there are things that we can be a part of doing. That this is actually invitation for us to join in what God is doing, rather than sabotaging, even if it's only sabotaging by inactivity.
Okay, that's cool. I understand that.
Really quick, just this has been something that I've been pondering as we've been preaching these Old Testament texts, is that they've been written to a very specific group of people, right? I.e. ancient Israelites in captivity. How do you guys wrestle with that fact that like these were words not necessarily intended for us?
I've been using the language of patterns, saying that when we see that this is how God acts, this helps us to dream about how God is continuing to act in the future.
That's very Bardian of you. You reformed a Nazarene.
Thanks, I think.
Yeah, I'm all for it. It's good. Chris, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think I end up using the language of analogy, because I never want to – I mean, I don't think any of us would ever say that we're exactly where those people are. But I think there's enough that's analogous to be able to say – or to ask the question, there are some similarities – so what might this text say to us given those similarities, even if there are lots of differences?
All right, well, we would love to hear how you're handling this text on the second Sunday of Christmas. You can let us know at catchylecty.com or at facebook.com/catchylecty. You can also find all our other resources there, including series downloads, all that kind of stuff, if you need graphics for any of this. Thank you again for your hard work in the art and the call of preaching. And until next time, grace and peace be with you.